It's a beautiful day in Tampa Bay for a Two for Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. The only 1-29-2-0-19 in the history of humanity. Let's continue to choose on purpose.
With a purpose.
To
give a great day.
Beautiful humans, this is Glenn Klein Online. Welcome in to another excursion into organized fun with a purpose. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you know them, you love them, you can't live without them. Please say hello to the producer and engineer extraordinaire and the co-host of this fine podcast effort, the very lovely and talented Mr. Owen Pratt, the Big O.
Good evening.
How are you?
Amazing. How are you?
I have no complaints, but thank you for caring enough to ask.
My pleasure.
Little horse.
Me too. I did a lot of gallivanting this weekend.
Yeah, how was that?
It's good. Got some plunder.
Did the Gasparilla thing here in beautiful Tampa Bay. Was that your first Gasparilla?
It was.
You never forget your first, you know.
Yeah, that's what they say.
It's nice to be young. No doubt about it. But a good time was had by all.
Wonderful. Dressed up as a pirate. I told a lot of pirate jokes. You know what a pirate's favorite letter is?
What's that, Owen?
If you had to guess.
I would say an R.
You think it'd be the R, but it'd actually be the C.
Once we get the podcast going on video, that's a much better video joke. Because he made a little C with his fingers. So we are in the official Hitting Home studios of Glenn Klein Online. And not coincidentally or ironically, Owen Pratt is the CEO of Hitting Home Media Marketing. And it's a very exciting part of what you do and who you are. And how did you stumble upon, or if it was a stumble, upon the whole concept of Hitting Home?
The stumble happened as a result of really a few doors that had been opened to me to some amazing mentors that I have met along the way that encouraged me to look at life in different ways and be able to see income generation in new and exciting ways and to really create an income vehicle for me that really suited the lifestyle and that I felt like was truest to who I am, that would make me the happiest and be able to help me get the most out of life.
How would you explain to the beautiful humans what Hitting Home Media Marketing does?
Hitting Home Media Group is the cornerstone of what we do is digital marketing with an expertise in nuanced Facebook ads, digital marketing. So, and we're really just experts at getting best return for digital investment. So right now with where we're at in history, Facebook and Instagram, your ability to get in front of people's faces is really as cheap as it's ever been. You know, you pay a couple grand for a billboard and so many people see it, but you know, it takes 10 bucks to get in front of 1,000 people on Facebook, and that's where everybody's looking anyway. So it's just the opportunity right now for marketing is incredible.
This is Glenn Klein Online. He is Owen Pratt, who is the business partner of yours truly, as well as the CEO of Hitting Home Media Group. He's doing some breathing exercises, which is always exciting. Give the elevator pitch for Hitting Home, please.
The elevator pitch?
Yeah.
I just did.
Why Hitting Home, though?
Why Hitting Home? That's a good question. Because of me?
What's so special about you?
What's so special about
me? I know I could answer that, but what's so special about you?
I really seek first to understand, then to be understood. And so I'm listening is a one of my, the I found the most important skill sets I can learn to develop. So I really seek to understand where a person is with what they're trying to do, not only with their business and their company, but also lifestyle, why they're trying to do the things in business that they're trying to do, what results they're trying to get in their life. And so from understanding that first and being able to set up a game plan or provide a service that can help shorten that gap or help them do something that they wouldn't have been able to do on their own, that's where I step in and see if it's a good fit for me and whoever I'm working with.
And you're already having, I mean, this, the company is a new company, relatively speaking, but you've already had some really big home runs.
It's been exciting.
So if you're interested, and why wouldn't you be, you can just email Owen at coach@glenklineonline.com and just say attention Owen and put him in touch with you about how, it basically, beautiful humans, Hitting Home Media Group can help any product or service take it to the next level. That's the bottom line. And you want to be, I've been blown away by Owen's expertise and what can be done at a ridiculously inexpensive budget. It's amazing. You've got a great partner that works with you that is cutting edge to do the research and the it's the creative end of it. It's just, it's an amazing process, and it's for any product or service, correct?
Correct. There's nothing, it's an amazing time to be able to sell something on online, and you can scale unbelievably a lot of times without even having to see a product. You know, it's been people that have had tremendous success just finding alternative ways to outsource, and it's just, it's a fun time to be alive in the marketing world.
It's a fun time to be alive, period, because with all the stress and the hassle that the year 2019 seems to be bringing and has brought, you have a choice. You can see the glass is half empty or the glass is half full. I choose on purpose, with a purpose,
to give.
To give a great day, and also to be cognizant of the cup is actually overflowing. I mean, one of the best things you can do, you guys, if you're feeling bummed out, is just write down 10 things you're thankful for every morning. Just write it down, 10 things. Like, oh, I don't know, you got a roof over your head, or the lights came on, or you've got indoor plumbing, or your children are healthy.
There's great food in the fridge.
There's food in the fridge. You have a shower to take, a hot shower. I was talking to a girlfriend of mine the other day, and we were commiserating over the fact that we both had our credit card identity stolen recently. And it's a freaking hassle when that happens, and it's happening more and more. People out there using their intelligence for ill-gotten gain. And she was like, I hate when that fucking shit happens. I said, yeah, I do too. It's a hassle. I said, but it's what I like to call first world problems. See, if we couldn't charge things and put things on credit, we would never have credit stolen. We just wouldn't. But these are first world problems, and we are engaged in first world problems. And yes, there's travails and tribulation and tragedy. But the question is it better to focus on the negative or to be more positive in your outlook on life? I choose to be an optimistic realist. And I think it's realistic and rational to be optimistic. Things, ladies and gentlemen, are getting better on the planet. I know it doesn't seem like it because the media has the slogan and the philosophy, if it bleeds, it leads. They could do a whole newscast on good news if they wanted to, but they don't. But I do. I choose to be focused on the good shit, on this, taking the shit. There's only two things you could do with shit. You can flush it down the toilet, or you can turn it into manure and use it as fertilizer to make things grow. That's my choice. That's the decision that I have made.
It's funny. They actually did a study on pessimism, or rather realism versus optimism. And what they found is that something like 80% of the time, the realists are closer to getting the results that they thought they were going to get. Their prediction of what was going to happen was way more accurate than the optimists. But by far, the results of optimists had better results. So they would have them do some trivial task and then rate how well they thought they were going to do. The people that were realists were pretty accurate to how well they thought they were going to do, but the optimists who had the pie in the sky thought they were going to do amazing were way, you know, not nearly as well as they thought they were going to do, but were across the board better.
Right. Than realists. Right. I mean, you kind of had that experience this weekend.
I did.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And that's your attitude. Mm-hmm. You're going for it, bro.
Find that where focus goes, energy flows. You focus on the.
Where focus goes, energy goes. What is it?
Where focus goes, energy flows. If you focus on the things you're grateful for, the good things that you have, more energy and more abundance and more life goes to those things.
That's it. He's Owen Pratt. He is the energy and abundance flower. This is Glenn Klein online. I think there's a major synergy between hitting home and our next guest, our special guest. He is a regular in the old Glenn Klein radio show. He's our Israeli correspondent. His name is Adam Bellos. Adam describes himself as a serial entrepreneur, see what I'm saying, who has worked in the United States, China, and Israel. He was raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, and served in the Israeli Defense Force and now calls Tel Aviv, Israel, his home. He received his bachelor's in Judaic studies from the University of Arizona and an MA in Middle Eastern history from Tel Aviv University. Adam has advised for members of the Israeli parliament, including Dov Liebman and former Ambassador Michael Oren. Adam is the founder and CEO of the Israel Innovation Fund, a new Israel-centered NGO focused on sharing Israeli culture with the world. Please welcome to Glenn Klein Online, Senior Adam Bellos. Adam!
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being had.
I have to say, I love the where focus... Where focus is, energy flow. What did you say?
Where focus goes, energy flows.
Energy flows. Yeah, great, great saying. I love it. Very true.
What have you been focused on lately?
Oh, my God. What have I been focused on? Keeping out the noise and enjoying the music. Mm.
I like that.
Just, you know, I find it very interesting that at the beginning of your conversation, you guys were talking about gratitude. And recognition of what's good in one's life. And I got to tell you, that is such an important thing when it comes to the mindset for success. That's so necessary.
Do you have to take that call?
No, that was somebody else's phone. I silenced it.
Oh, you have a guest in your home in Tel Aviv?
Yeah. I have a guest that is an employee in my home in Tel Aviv because my home in Tel Aviv is also our office.
It's late there already, though, isn't it?
It is 8:23, it says, or maybe my clock is 5 minutes fast. It's about 8:20. It says 8:18. We usually work quite late. You know, I start my mornings at around 7, but I mean, sometimes people don't leave here till around 9 p.m. at night.
Right on.
I mean, everybody's quite dedicated to what we're trying to do.
What are you trying to do with the Israel Innovation Fund?
So the Israel Innovation Fund was started to bring Israel to you and then you to Israel. Our elevator pitches is that we launch commercially viable projects that highlight Israel's culture. I saw a problem with Jewish philanthropy and Israel-related philanthropy that didn't really make much sense. There's about $6 billion in philanthropic dollars that have to do with like the Jewish people or Israel or Jewish or Judaic or Israel Zionist related things. And I would say maybe 20% of the money actually gets to Israel. And that bothered me considering that I live in Israel and I see the difference between, you know, the salary that a CEO in Israel takes versus the salary of a nonprofit head, let's say in New York, that's doing something Israel related. It bothered me. I have a very big issue with corruption, and there's a lot of talk of corruption here in Israel with NGOs as well. And I wanted to create something that could hopefully connect you directly to Israel in a new way that was neither political nor religious. So we focus on all things Israeli culture related, you know, to communicate the message of Israel to the next generation of beautiful humans. People don't really want to be told what to think. And they don't want to have a religious discussion. And there's so much more in this country other than religion and politics to offer people. There's a vibrant culture that's existed here for quite some time, going back a number of millennia. And we look at the Israel Innovation Fund to share that through business. So I don't know if you've ever planted a tree in Israel, but our flagship project is called Wine on the Vine, and it's to introduce people to the Israeli wine culture that's quite vibrant here. So we allow people for $18 to plant a grapevine with a leading Israeli winery. And if you plant enough vines, you get wine from your vine.
Huh. And some of the most beautiful people in the world live in Israel.
I will wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I fall in love every day.
Why? I have a theory behind why that is. Why do you think that is, Adam?
I'm going to go with the mutt theory.
Yes, that's my theory. There's 120 countries represented in the land of Israel, which is basically the size of New Jersey.
Wow.
And we all know that mutts make the best dogs. The mixture in Israel, in Israel, it doesn't make a difference what race you are. It makes a difference if you're Jewish. So and now people don't know this. Most Israelis are not religious. About 10% of Israelis are truly like Orthodox and strictly observant. But you've got Asian Jewish people, Hispanic. What are you doing? You light a cigar?
No, I'm not doing anything. I'm listening to you list what types of Jews there are.
It sounded like you were clicking a cigar lighter.
No, I'm not doing anything, man.
We've got the Sephardic Jews are the Spanish or Hispanic Jews, correct?
Sephardic?
Yeah. And then you have the Ashkenazi, the European Jews. You have South American Jews. You have American Jews now. You got Ethiopian Jews. You got African Jews. You got everything.
It's a lot of flavors.
And they all mix together. And eventually Israel is going to look like, you know, Halle Berry or Barack Obama. I mean, just going to be these beautiful olive skin. And if I think that eventually that's what the world is going to look like, we're just going to be one just beautiful, homogenized, gorgeous race of people. And all this bullshit of racism, judging people by the color of their skin or where they're from or what the religion they have. And now I'm never going to see it in my lifetime. But that's the direction the world is going. Adam, you live in Tel Aviv where you guys are under assault all the time, where you're having to defend yourself. And there's all kinds of stuff that happens vis-a-vis that. How optimistic are you personally? And do you get a sense from the homeland there? How optimistic are people about the future, not only of Israel, but of the planet?
So I want to make a correction. In Tel Aviv, I'm not fighting for my life. It's quite safe here. Right now, I'm going to walk outside to my balcony in the open air. I have no rockets raining down on me or anything. It's quite a vibrant metropolitan cosmopolitan city. Listen, I would say that most Israelis are extremely optimistic about the future. While our prime minister continues to have allegations of corruption, he also continues to open up different parts of the world that were not originally open to Israel. I mean, in the last 8 years, we've seen normalization with the Arab world, and we're seeing Africa being opened up to. China, our relationship with China and India has dramatically changed for the better. Even our relationship with Russia is completely different than what it once was. Our direct and immediate threat is Iran, and now they're on our border, which is something that was actually said would happen over the last 10 years. But I don't really think that Israelis are not optimistic. I think Israelis can be more cynical and very realistic, but they're not pessimistic. I think that a lot of things that, one of the things that everybody always brings up to me is they say, oh, you must love Trump because he moved the embassy. And it's very funny. The moving of the embassy was not, such a big deal to us in Israel. It was symbolic. People in Jerusalem really, it meant a lot to them emotionally. But it was not, for the last 60 years of the country, 70 years of the country, Jerusalem has been the capital by our standards. So to us, it was just another country, which is really the second major superpower, because Russia did it before the United States, acknowledged Jerusalem as their capital, a building that was already built in in Jerusalem that was being used as a consulate became the embassy. And it was really just a change of plaque on a building. Symbolically, it did represent a number of different things around the world. But for us, it really did not cause the chaos or big deal that it's not something that's discussed every day. Whereas in American politics, I feel like it's brought up quite a lot as something that was very substantial and big and gigantic. And I understand that, especially with the new Congress that came in as well. But
why the discretion in capitals for the people that are unfamiliar with Israel's voluptuous history?
Why the discretion?
Well, why
maybe the better word would have been discrepancy.
Discrepancy. Thank you.
I mean, it's really easy. After 1948, the city was split between Jordan and Israel. In 1967, the Jordanians lost control of eastern, northern, and southern Jerusalem, which is commonly referred to as just East Jerusalem. Around 1987, the very first Palestinian uprising took place, which is known as the Palestinian Intifada. And internationally, for years, nobody really recognized Israel's annexation of all of Jerusalem. Yeah. And because of that, and because there was no final diplomatic status that was achieved after 1967, that's actually one of the weird things that's always happened with Israel. They would always have military victory, but it would never be followed by a diplomatic victory. So there was never any diplomatic resolution on the status of Jerusalem. So many countries did not want to move their embassy to Jerusalem because they had already built them in Tel Aviv. Because of the country's situation between 1948 to 1967. But since the country was erected or founded, whatever term you want to use, Jerusalem has always been the capital of Israel. Israelis have always seen Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The Knesset has always gathered in Jerusalem. It's really a political thing. It's sentiment with, I would say, many Islamic countries that they see Jerusalem as a holy city. For me personally, I think it's a political thing on why they wouldn't recognize it. There's a lot more Arabs than there are Jews. And now the situation, or you can say the relationship between Jews and Arabs or Muslim countries in the Jewish state is dramatically changing day by day.
I mean, the fact that Israel and Saudi Arabia are cooperating is incredible. That's against Iran. One thing that people don't realize is how open Israel is as a society. A lot of times when you see Israel portrayed in the news, which we haven't been seeing a lot of because Trump is just so dominating the news coverage here. Just, I mean, not just what he's doing, but how he does everything.
Yeah, it's insane how much you guys focus on every little thing.
Well, I don't.
It's fascinating.
And that's why we're having Adam on, because we haven't heard much about Israel lately. But Israel is a very liberal, and I use that as a cultural distinction. Gay people have rights in Israel. There's gay pride in Israel. Israel had a transgender woman as a Miss Universe contestant.
Wow.
And
she was Arab Israeli, I think.
And wow. and they want to portray Israel in the same terms that they did. And that was accurate with South Africa and apartheid. Nothing could be further from the truth. There are Arab men and women who are members of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. Arabs have rights. They have rights of expression. They have rights of freedom of religion. And yes, I don't agree with everything that Israel does. I don't agree with everything that I do, for God's sake. But I know that it's a free, vibrant, wonderful democracy in the middle of one dictatorship after another. And I think, Adam, that the movement to boycott Israel economically, the so-called anti-Zionist movement, is just a rehashed and a evolution, if you will, of good old-fashioned anti-Semitism. That's what
I completely agree with you. Martin Luther King said it best. When you're talking about Zionists, you're really speaking about Jews. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. There was an article in the New York Times that came out recently trying to say that if Martin Luther King was alive today, he wouldn't support Israel. And I'm sure that Martin Luther King would have plenty of criticism about many Israeli policies, just like every other Jew does, you know, and just like every other person does. But I mean, you know, as somebody that grew up in the United States and now lives here and views the United States with a like an eagle eyes perspective, so to speak, you know, it really is very disheartening to have seen how much the ideology has grown and is starting to become mainstream. You know, I saw it when I left the United States, it was still growing and it was still in its nascent stages, but you knew that it was going to become something. And the thing was, is that the supporters of the BDS movement were really very much tend to align with the Bernie Sanders democratic socialist outlook that is becoming very, very popular and very, very strong in the Democratic Party today. And it's just, I find the entire conversation very interesting about what's going on in Congress. And I think Ted Cruz came out and said one of the reasons why the government shutdown has taken so long is because they don't know how to control the far left of the Democratic Party now, not because of the rest of the working Democrats. It's absolutely fascinating how the BDS movement is behind, are the people that are behind so many other things as well, that I think if you would have been studying the movement 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I guess you could say the success of the movement wouldn't have been so far-fetched.
So
if that makes sense.
Just to clarify, what is the BDS movement?
The BDS movement is like what Glenn said, the boycott, divestment, sanction, Israel movement, to try to isolate it economically in order to end the occupation of Palestine, is how they refer to it. They believe in a country that would be one Palestinian state from the river to the sea. Supposedly, Jews would be allowed to be there. I highly doubt it, considering they don't seem to really welcome us in the West Bank, Judea, Samaria, whatever you want to call it.
I was just shift a little bit. We're talking with Adam Bellows. This is Glenn Kline online. Owen Pratt in the Hitting Home Media Group studios here in Tampa Bay, Florida. Adam is our Israeli correspondent. We don't get much news nationally about Israel right now, because Trump is just, it's 24/7 wall to wall Trump. And
it's gotta be horrible.
Well, it's 2 days ago I had the news on.
It's wall to wall. All right.
And Owen said to me, he was like, dude, cause I had it on, the news on in the studio, and he said, would it be okay if you turn the news off? And I said, why? He said, because I'm in a really positive place right now and I want to stay here. And I just went click and I turned it off. But of course, Trump is just, I mean, we could go all day about Trump, but he's being accused of some major corruption, and the whole Robert Mueller investigation rolls on, and Roger Stone just got indicted, one of Trump's most vehement supporters. But we know that Prime Minister Netanyahu has also been accused of corruption. And what's going on with that? Was he indicted? What's happening with Bibi Netanyahu?
He wasn't indicted. So recently the Israeli government dissolved again, and there's going to be elections in March. For me, this is obviously known as the greatest time every 4 years, because I love elections and the Israeli elections are fantastic. These are without a doubt the funniest Israeli elections, just because of the antics between politicians. But basically, the big discussion right now is that if Netanyahu is to get indicted, whether or not he will step down or not, be forced to step down, be asked to step down. There's a lot of different things that are being thrown out there. He is asking for people to directly face him that are his accusers. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Well, I really appreciate that. Because, Adam, I wouldn't know that you were being completely honest with me unless you said that. So thank you for saying that.
I feel like I have a very complicated relationship with Netanyahu. I grew up with him as a public figure and representing Israel when I was a kid. I moved here right as the Arab Spring, erupted, and he was prime minister, and he saw the country through that. I understand that he does represent the last of his generation's leadership, and that there is a significant amount of corruption surrounding that time period and those leaders. I know that if you dig hard enough, you can find something on anyone. So, you know, I don't want to go out and say, like, the prime minister is corrupt. He's not corrupt. But I can say that he needs to have one more term, serve out his term, and pass the baton. Because the majority of the people that are contenders to be the next prime minister are people that have all served under him directly as his chief of staff, or people that have been in the political arena with him for the last 15 years, 20 years. And I think it would be good for our country to have a new prime minister in not this election, but the one after that. You know, I can't say that he's corrupt. I'm not a judge. I'm not residing over his case. But I do know that for a very, very large portion of the country, people would like him to move on. And then on the other hand, I mean, people see him as the greatest prime minister of all time. They see him as the person that opened up Africa and the Arab world. They see him as the person that brought Israel out of socialism into capitalism. Yeah, I mean, like, he's done a number of amazing things for the country, but it's, you know, he's been in, we don't have term limits here in Israel, which I think is an actual problem for a prime minister. I mean, I think one of the coolest things about America is that you only get a guy for 8 years.
Well, I wish to God that we had that for Congress and the Senate as well, term limits.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And now under Newt Gingrich, they voted to have term limits, but rightfully so, the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional because it's not in the Constitution. And so you have to have a constitutional amendment in order to make term limits, because which they did for the president. After Franklin Roosevelt served for three terms and then would have been a full fourth term, the first president ever to run after two full terms, then the United States passed the last constitutional amendment, which was to limit the president to two terms. Yes, thank God that it's only two terms.
Washington had suggested that. There had been no other president had ever run from, and I think it was only because of World War II that he kept running.
Well, he's also a power-hungry man.
But no, I think it's actually something that is very harmful to the country that a prime minister, I mean, he's been prime minister, I believe, for 12 years. He's in the running with David Ben-Gurion now, who's going to be the longest serving prime
regardless of what you think of Benjamin Netanyahu, he is one of the most significant and influential prime ministers in Israel's history, for sure.
He's an amazing man. He's done amazing things for this country. He's served this country very, very well.
From an objective standpoint, Adam, the evidence that you've seen presented on these corruption charges, is there anything there? Is there any there?
Listen, I mean, like, there is a lot being presented, a lot, and for so many different things. I mean, there are issues of him spending, you know, thousands of dollars on ice cream and pink champagne, and Sarah Netanyahu sending her dry cleaning constantly abroad to get cleaned. You know, things like that, like gigantic hotel bills. And when you have a country with as high a taxes as you do here, that is what makes Israelis angry. It's that type of impropriety that's public and blatant and nouveau riche, so to speak. They're not, you know, it's like, fine, do it in private. Don't get caught doing it, and don't make a big, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I
don't understand. If it's true she's sending her dry cleaning overseas, I think that probably was a little bit of an extravagance that she didn't need to do, especially as she's billing the good people of Eretz Yisrael. We're talking with
obviously there was one.
Well, hold on, Adam. Yeah. I got to do a reset here. I'm resetting.
No, do a reset.
Take a deep breath. I know you're excited, and we're excited to have you.
No,
he's Adam Scott Bellows. It's spelled B-E-L-L-O-S. He's a good friend of mine on Facebook, and his fund is called the Israel Innovation Fund. What's your website?
TIIF.org, TIF.org.
And how's that going?
Wine on the Vine. Everything's going great. It's very exciting. I mean, listen, my organization looks to reboot the Zionist movement as a cultural movement. And we're trying to engage the next generation in Israel because of all the political chaos that's kind of surrounding it. I would say the negative publicity that many different organizations are created to garner to make Israel look bad. And we are looking to connect as many people to Israel through a completely different lens.
So what do you do for fun in Israel?
I mean, listen, my life is pretty fun right now, to be completely honest.
Thank you for being honest. I appreciate that.
No, I listen, I'm having a very good time with the projects that I'm working on right now. Significant amount of time.
You ever go to the nude beaches in Tel Aviv?
I have never been to a nude beach in Tel Aviv, and I've lived here for 4 years.
What are you waiting on?
Apparently, the
Klein
Online episode to encourage him to do it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, nude beaches have never been my thing. But I think the last time we spoke when I was on your show, I was living in Florentine, which was the artist district, and I recently moved to the old city of Jaffa.
Right by Tel Aviv.
Yeah, I mean, it's down the street from the city, but it's the old city that was here before Tel Aviv was.
So what, when you look out your window in the old city of Jaffa, what do you see?
I can see the Mediterranean and the famous Jaffa Clock Tower.
That's pretty cool. I've been to Israel 3 times, and I want to take Owen there.
I want to go very bad.
And but we will go to the new beaches for sure.
Can I just take a break from Israel and just say congratulations on the birth of your first grandchild?
Thank you, Connor Klein. Romping, stomping dynamite, that kid. Boy, he was born dead. He was born not breathing.
He was born stillbirth.
Yeah. And they brought him back. It was amazing experience and gut-wrenching, but we were so freaking lucky. The guy, first of all, St. Joseph Hospital in Tampa is like the hospital in the country. If you have to go through something like this, the NICU unit or the NICU. But the guy who's in charge of taking a baby where Connor was just happened to be in the hospital at the time. And what they do is they cool the babies down. They lower their temperature immediately, which stops the potentially stops the brain damage. And the way that they found this out, that this was possible, was when people would fall into frozen lakes and go through the ice in places like Michigan and where you and I first met, Adam, in Wisconsin. They could last 20 minutes, half an hour without any breathing because it would literally slow down their metabolism in such a degree that that brain damage would stop. But if somebody drowns here in Florida, they're dead. So they cool these kids down, and then once the seizures stop and the, you know, they're monitoring. When he was in the NICU, Connor, there was a nurse in his room 24/7, right by his bed.
Wow.
with a monitor right in front of her face, monitoring every single thing. And our son Judah and his wife Candace just proved to be incredibly strong people through this. They were amazing. And then once they determined that it's time to start raising the temperature, they raise it like half a degree an hour. It takes about 24 to 36 hours. And he's done amazing. I mean, he's hitting all his points. He's going to be, let's see, September, October, November, December, January. He is about to be 5 months old. Amazing. And he's what a, Owen's met him. He's quite the kid, isn't he?
A little stud.
Yeah. He's got the beautiful auburn hair, gorgeous blue eyes. Watch out, ladies.
He's putting on some weight now, too.
In 20, 30, let's see, he'll be 18 in 20, 36. That's weird.
That's weird.
How old will you be in 2036?
42.
Wow. How old will you be, Adam, in 2036?
I have no idea. How old am I now?
I don't know. How
I'm,
old?
You're 30, like, I'm 31.
Yeah.
That's how many years? 18, how many years 18. From now,
you'll be 49.
Yeah. Wow. I'll be almost 50. I can't wait.
I'll be 78.
Wow.
Yeah, bitches. So,
for someone that's never been to Israel before, what would you recommend to get the full, authentic, most in-depth experience and to really maximize your experience in Israel? What would you recommend?
What would I recommend?
Yeah, just
okay, how many days you got?
Say 10 days.
10 days. And what's like your lifestyle? Like, what do you like to do?
Ooh, good question. Nude beaches is probably pretty high on the
Okay, so that's easy. You go to the beach one day.
Loves the surf.
Love the history, though. Definitely interested in the religious, historical aspect of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
The surf, the nightlife, the culture, the food, music.
Okay, so you got 10 days here. Yes. I would say at least spend a couple of them in Tel Aviv. There you can get the food, the surf. There's also amazing museums that cover like the history of the country and the different army units that were part of the pre-state. Also Independence Hall is there. Plus you have, I mean, like it's an amazing city for food and the culinary experiences. There's a lot of chef restaurants in Tel Aviv. There's great surfing as well. For all of the history, you got to spend a couple of days in Jerusalem. I would totally hire a guide to really, so that you could go and get like the full experience of like learning what every single thing is. Like, you know, you walk into the old city of Jerusalem and you turn, I think you immediately turn left after going into Jaffa Gate, and you would miss it if you didn't know what it was, but it's the graves of the architects of the old city that you have today, that the king killed because he didn't want the secrets of the city getting out. It's little things like that. So I would definitely say get a guide.
So what's the best way to get a guide? I've heard there may be some, you know, not as trustworthy or integrity based.
The best way to do it is always go through somebody that you know who's gone before and ask them about their experience with their guide. And a lot of the way that these Israeli tour guides work is completely through word of mouth and recommendation.
Okay.
How many tours have you led, Adam?
I don't like lead like real tours. Like you have to go to like tour guiding school for 2 years and learn everything from the history to the geology of the country. It's insane what they have to learn. But I've taken people around Jerusalem a number of times. I take people around Tel Aviv. I've sometimes given like small graffiti tours in Florentine. I gave the Kanevskis a graffiti tour. And then I had the meet with one of the artists that I was working with actually at the time. Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, you can take care of a lot of the religious and spiritual needs. I would suggest if you want to go to the Christian sites, you definitely have to go to Bethlehem, and you should arrange that in advance.
You should absolutely not go to Bethlehem. It's the worst.
Is it bad?
It is absolutely a complete waste of time. I've been there 3 times. You got to go to Lake Kinneret, also known as the Sea of Galilee.
Oh yeah, well you have to go to the Sea of Galilee.
Tiberias.
You have to go to the Dead Sea.
Yeah, and you get to float in the Dead Sea. You cannot drown in the Dead Sea. You get in there, and there's so much salt, it's dead. So you're totally buoyant. It's pretty cool.
If you're a nightlife guy, I would definitely, like I said, you got to spend a couple of days in Tel Aviv. You have to experience the nightlife. It's a wild city. This is the city that never sleeps for sure.
Where's the hottest club right now in Tel Aviv, in Adam Bellis's opinion? What's it called?
Honestly, it's my apartment. to be completely honest, I mean, that's where I'm
check
doing
out the
a lot
Facebook
of
group to get on the guest
days.
List no, for Adam's apartment.
My apartment is used as we use it as an art gallery, an event space. I mean, we can hold about 200 people in my apartment. And it's where we throw a lot of our events. We throw a lot of parties as an organization to create awareness and, you know, raise funds. We usually have parties with about 100 people at each one of them. We serve unlimited free wine, which is why I was going to say, if you come to Israel, you definitely have to go to one of the 300 wineries that are in this country. And there are wineries from the tip of the south to the tip of the north. The whole country is scattered with them. And what's cool is that if you're a wine lover, this whole country is a wine country, which I think is kind of cool.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Do you have to do the barucha every time you drink a glass of wine?
I don't think so. I mean, like, it's up to you. I personally do not bless every glass of wine.
It's the prayer over the wine. Baruch atah Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam. Hasher kiddushanu. What is it? Baruch atah Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam.
Borei
Pri Hagafen, which means, praise be thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who give us the fruit of the vine.
Of the vine. Mm.
People that say that Jesus didn't turn to water into grape juice, they absolutely don't know Jewish culture. That's for sure.
I didn't know there was people who say that.
Oh, yeah. Of course, the extreme Christians that say that drinking alcohol is a sin say that it was actually grape juice. Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so at all.
I mean, if it was grape juice, I don't think they'd be that happy at a wedding when you turn the water into wine. That's not very festive.
No, it's a huge part of the culture here. The wine boom has like really started to happen now in Israel. So many wineries have popped up. The industry really kind of began about 20 years ago in terms of like good wine starting to be made here. The Carmel Winery has obviously been here since like the 1880s, but the wine in this country is absolutely amazing. Getting to work with like the best wineries in the industry, in my opinion, or at least the larger ones that we work with as an organization, is absolutely amazing. The stories that the people have behind starting the wineries and then the location of where the wineries are, you could spend one whole day at a winery, you could go to three in a region. It's definitely something to do.
And of course, Israel's economy continues to be the envy of the world, a lot of the world. And between the wineries and high tech, I mean, Israel's like the Silicon Valley of the planet.
Really?
Yeah, they call it Silicon Wadi here.
Silicon what?
Wadi.
What does that mean?
It's Arabic for valley.
Huh, wow. How many Arab friends do you have?
I don't count like my friends on whether or not they're Jewish or Arab. That's like kind of weird, no?
But
how many people do I know that aren't Jewish?
Well, no. How many friends do you have that aren't Jewish in Israel? If you had to say.
I'd say five. That's probably cool. Three. Who I actually speak to like on a regular basis and like have a deep relationship with.
What do they say about all the bullshit that's happening there, the Arabs there that you're friends with?
So I have a really good friend named Sal, whose family was from Abu Ghosh, who, if I'm correct and if I understand the history correctly, his tribe fought with the IDF and was like on Israel's side. Okay, so he comes from a family whose background has been supporting Israel since the creation of the country. I mean, like, listen, you know, you hear about, and by the way, I've seen it in my everyday where you experience people doing small, you know, racist things like, oh, he likes just saying, oh, he's an Arab, or I don't want to buy from this store because there are Arabs. I want to buy from this store because they're Jews. I mean, like, it's like any other minority that experiences racism from time to time, like anywhere else in the world where you would experience what it is to be a minority.
Yeah, I don't. That doesn't excuse it for me. When I was growing up, when I was growing up as a young Jewish kid in Chicago, and for some reason I always hated prejudice just naturally. It was in me. I don't know why. And I saw my Jewish friends and relatives being racist, and it just didn't make any sense to me how the most persecuted people in the history of the world could maintain racism. And it's just because Jewish people are just as normal as anybody else. But I have to say this about my Jewish people is that when push comes to shove, like the civil rights movement, Jewish people were huge supporters of civil rights, huge supporters in large numbers of gay rights and women rights. And I'm proud of that. I had a friend of mine that I met who was Palestinian here in the Tampa area. And I used to go to his sandwich shop, and we would talk politics all the time. And he came out, and we were chatting out in his patio, and he was from Ramallah, and he still has family there. And so we were talking, and because I'm very interested in what's happening in Israel, and he said, "Glenn," he said, "I'm going to tell you something." He said, "You can never tell who told you this." He said, "We never had it better than when the Israelis were in control of the West."
Oh, for sure.
And he said, if that word got out that I said that specifically, he said that my family would be killed in Ramallah. That was a shame to hear.
I mean, listen, look at, like, in terms of what I've had to listen to from Sal and like the experiences, that's more being an Arab Israeli within, you know, Israel's Green Line. I mean, he lives within the Green Line, I believe, or he lives within Israel proper, so to speak. I mean, in terms of Palestinians, like, I mean, like, they, their government is completely different. Their experience is completely different than it was when Israel, I mean, they didn't have the right to participate in Israeli democracy, but they still had freedom of movement and things like that.
So I mean, what's, like, the Green Line? Sorry, forgive my ignorance.
What were you going to say? Oh, the Green Line was the demarcation line between Jordan and Israel in 1948. Okay. After the 1948 war.
I'm saying, when my wife, Dawn, and I went to Israel the first time, and we were visiting people just to the...
What year?
I want to say it was 95. And we were saying, okay, we were in the quote-unquote settlements, which are nice condo developments, and literally across the road was the quote-unquote the West Bank. And Dawn said, the West Bank of what? Because it was right there. It's up against the Mediterranean pretty much. And it's the West Bank of the Jordan River. It goes all the way down. And it's the people, you know, I know a lot of people that are listening right now know the history. Owen doesn't, because he just hasn't, you know, been interested in it. And he's interested in other things like nude beaches and surfing, but it's all good.
That's okay. I like nude beaches and surfing.
But the point is that Israel all along the way has traded land for peace to no avail, except with Egypt and Jordan. They unilaterally pulled out of South Lebanon. There would never have been a problem if, when the United Nations declared Israel to be a state and Jordan to be the Arab state, there were no Palestinians back in the day. They were either Jews or Arabs. The whole Palestinian thing happened when the Palestinian Liberation Organization started in the early 60s with this guy named Yasser Arafat. And Arafat was given by Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak, who at the time was the prime minister of Israel, on the way out of Clinton's administration, 97% of what he wanted. Arafat, who had been a terrorist, or from the Palestinians' perspective, a freedom fighter, and he could not pull the trigger on peace. And he unleashed the Intifada, the second Intifada, which is basically a riot of Palestinian people. This is where all the suicide bombers came. That's why Israel had to build a wall. That's why Trump can say a wall works, because they were blowing people up in restaurants and shopping malls and cafes. It was a constant in Israel, and they built the wall to keep the terrorists and the suicide bombers out. They trade suicide bomber cards, like baseball cards. The families of people who blow themselves up are taken care of by the Palestinian government. They're considered heroes. So they had to build this wall. That's why Trump could say a wall works. Because you know what? 99% of the suicide bombing stopped. Huh. This is what Israel deals with. The Hamas in Gaza, because Israel pulled out of Gaza, Hamas takes over in Gaza. The Palestinian Authority still is in charge of the West Bank. They basically have split government there. Hamas is a terrorist organization, and they store these rockets. Adam said he wasn't being threatened in Tel Aviv, but there are people that are threatened in Israel. Yes, Adam?
Oh, yeah. Listen, a couple weeks ago, if you remember, it should have been in the news. There was a day that we experienced more rockets fired at the country than ever before. It was a solid 24 hours. All of the rockets were fired in the south, and it was... I had my phone going off, because you never know if they're going to fire on Tel Aviv, because we know they have the capability to. And it went on for a solid 24 hours. You couldn't sleep if you were smart.
They indiscriminately fire the rockets. They hide the rockets in schools and hospitals. So if Israel goes after the rockets, of course they're going to kill innocent people. Israel warns the Palestinian people that they're about to be attacked, to get the hell out. Who does that? But you don't hear that about in the media. All you hear about is Israel bombed an area and all these kids. It's horrible. And I wish Israel would be a little bit more aggressive in their humanitarian and make a bigger deal out of it in their humanitarian efforts with the Palestinians. But listen, you're under that kind of attack. You don't know what you're dealing with until you've dealt with it. But I'm very optimistic about what's happening in Israel. I'm very optimistic what's happening in the world, frankly. As messy as it seems, freedom
is
messy. Freedom is messy. Yeah.
No, but we're entering a very great stage. There is so much global cooperation right now. I think like the relationship between the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Israel is something that is, I mean, 10 years ago, no one could have even imagined that.
Well, we are going to end on that optimistic note with Adam Scott Bellows. You can find him on Facebook. He's a friend of mine. And just if you want to contact him, you can do it that way. You find him in Israel. He is the founder and CEO of the Israel Innovation Fund. Adam, shalom and lehitra ot. And
Erev tov.
And we love you and really appreciate your time.
Likewise, Glenn. It's always a pleasure.
There he goes.
Owen, it was very nice to meet you.
It was awesome meeting you, Adam. Thanks for coming on.
Likewise. Have me on anytime.
There he goes, Adam Scott Bellows. I think there's some synergy between the Israel Innovation Fund and Hitting Home Media Group. I really do.
Be curious to know more about what kind of projects he's working on.
Well, friend request them.
Shoot a little.
I'll hook you guys up.
Hook it up.
Yep, I'll do that.
Matchmaker.
And then we'll go to Israel.
I want to do a show in Israel.
I want to do a lot of shows in Israel. That's it. I've been to many places in the world. There's basically two places that I still want to go. I want to go to Australia, and I want to go back to Israel, and also to Sarasota one more time. So yeah, Adam's great, and Israel's great. And you beautiful humans are great for logging on. And let us hear from you at coach@glennkleinonline.com. The website is glennkleinonline.com. If you have comments, if you have suggestions for guests, of course, always remember our show that airs and is uploaded about three times a week called Sex in the Pews. It is not for the faint of heart, but it's where we talk very openly about getting rid of shame-based sexuality and all things sex, and about how destructive religion has been to the human sexual experience. Just be forewarned, it's very raw and fun, and it's organized fun with a purpose in a different way. Right, Big O?
That's absolutely correct.
Big O, what shit did we learn today?
Shit did we learn today? Where focus goes, energy flows.
That's what I wrote down.
And I learned, we got the green marker?
The green line.
The green line. Separates the West Bank.
The dividing from 1948, the initial. See, when Israel was formed, the concept was, because of what coming out of the Holocaust, you have finally the Jewish people would have their own homeland. So they carved up what was called Palestine, and part of it became Israel. 40% became Israel. 60% became what's now called Jordan, the Kingdom of Jordan. And then there's a ton of Palestinians that live in Jordan that are considered Palestinians, but they were Arabs.
Is there a lot of racial tension between the... Because there seems to be a lot of overlap between the Palestinians and the Jews.
The Palestinians.
Palestinians.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension. And, you know, it ain't easy. But Abba Ibn, who was the great former U.S. diplomat, or excuse me, Israeli diplomat, he had an expression. He said, the Arabs never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And that's what Arafat did when he had Clinton and Ehud Barak, who was a labor prime minister, quote unquote liberal, and they had it, and they just couldn't do it. And then all the mess that has come since then, it's been really chaotic. And Israel has done an amazing job restraining themselves, continuing to grow their society. And this fund that Adam's doing, the Israeli Innovation Fund, and this entrepreneurial spirit has been unleashed. Israel was really a socialistic society. And as he said earlier in the program, Benjamin Netanyahu really spearheaded a more free market. They still have national health care, and there's still high taxes, and everybody has to serve in the military, including women. Mm-hmm. But there's freedom. There's freedom of movement. There's freedom of expression. There's freedom sexually. And it's a beautiful place. It really is. A bunch of beautiful, wonderful, gorgeous human beings in Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel.
I met a pair of gorgeous human Israelites in Argentina.
You did?
I did. They had just finished serving their time in the military and were traveling the world. And there they were. And actually, it was Uruguay. Took a detour, a little day trip over to Uruguay from Argentina.
Men or women?
Women.
Yes.
And Ron Shalev was her name.
Anything else you'd like to share?
She was beautiful. Just gorgeous. Didn't work out logistically with being able to meet up with her and her friends, but just met her in a park randomly and approached this beautiful woman to say hello.
Man, what? Well, I learned today that, should I learn that Israel has got a vibrant wine industry.
Yes.
The vineyards are blooming in the land.
Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Until that time, this is Owen Pratt and Glenn Klein online saying
Shalom, everybody.